Attention, spoilers are beginning now.
Sci-fi party line.
Welcome to another episode of the Sci-fi Party Line podcast. This is your hostess, Kat, and today I have with me your other hostess, Hanako.
Hello!
Today, Hanako and I are talking about American Gods.
Yay! Again! Yay! Yeah.
And we're talking about everything up to the finale. You heard in the feed, we got up to maybe halfway in the first season, and we shared our thoughts with you, and things progressed, and here we are.
Boy, did they. It's like so many people were talking about how, you know, I heard a lot of people who were not familiar with the story kind of, you know, complain a little bit that the story was kind of dragging out the first few episodes. And I'm like, okay, well, they kind of have to, you know, take some time to introduce us to this world. But boy, they took it up a notch in these last few episodes, because wow, so much stuff happened, and you know, new characters were introduced that were awesome, and we got to see, you know, characters from the first part of the season. One thing I will say about the show that I love, yes, we have the main characters that we've seen throughout the whole season, like Shadow and Mr. Wednesday and Laura and Matt Sweeney. But we have a couple of characters who are only in maybe one episode or two episodes, or they may only have a scene or two, and they are making such an impact.
So it's who, like, for really, instance?
you know who I'm about to say first.
Okay, here we go.
Let's talk about Mr. Nancy. You know that had to come. You know, we see him in two scenes this season, first half of the season and then the season finale. And both of his scenes, he delivered some very powerful dialogue, not even just talking about the backgrounds of certain things. You know, in episode two, we got him talking, you know, talking to a slave full of ships, and he kind of talked about the future and, you know, kind of, you know, he kind of tailored his speech to some of the things that are happening to us in this present day and age. But he did the same with the season finale, giving us the background of Bilquis, which I absolutely loved. Mm-hmm. We got her background, but also his speech with that one also intermingled how women have been mistreated, mm-hmm. you know, just not just throughout history, but also present day, how women are, you know, basically oppressed, and how, you know, people are scared of our power. And it was just the way that he delivers this character. He does it with such, it's humorous, but it's not humorous. Like, it has a very serious tone, but he makes you laugh while he's telling the story.
Yeah.
You know, but
a true comedian.
Exactly. But it was just, you know, his scenes were great. I loved it. And then Easter in the last episode.
So, Hanako, this is where, when I told you this show is giving me what True Blood had, you know, we don't have True Blood anymore, and this show is giving me the True Blood vibes. This is why. This is one of our ladies from True Blood. Yes?
Was she? Wait a minute. I gotta remember. Was she in True Blood? I don't think she was.
Oh.
I don't know. Maybe she was.
But now I gotta search it while you talk about it. Okay, she was not. She feels like she was in True Blood.
She probably should have been.
Yeah. But I really loved Easter. The actress was perfect. It was just perfectly cheery and Easter and almost like a summer fairy. I love all of the Jesus that were walking around, Jesuses or whatever.
That was
And
that was interesting.
I love how they said that Jesus is looks different to every culture, and then there's because there's so many different types of Jesus.
Yes.
And so I never know if to go Jesus or Jesus's. I never know what to do with that. But
Jesus. Plural.
Maybe, maybe. And
yes, just say Jesus plural. There you go.
And I just thought it was so perfectly funny. They even had reference to like a buddy Christ from Kevin Smith films. And you remember that? He was kind of like a gnome or something. And
yes.
It was just really very cool. And it was kind of awesome to see Shadow kind of at a loss for words and kind of happy, and it was very happy, but it seems like he was questioning his happiness at the same time. So he was happy, but he was just like, I'm happy, and it just looked like it was a question mark because he couldn't understand why he was happy, but he was just rolling with it. And I thought that was fantastic.
Let me tell you, all of it, because at first I was a little confused when they first walked in the house and you start seeing these people. And I'm like, wait, that looks like Aunt. And then when the first Jesus came and spoke to Shadow, I was like, oh, they're really going there. Okay, let's see how this is going to play out. And then to actually look around the room and see all the different, you know, like you said, all the different Jesus plural, Jesus, whatever, you know, to see the ones that looked different and the ones who were dressed differently and the one who was holding the M&Ms and they were going through the holes in his hands. And it was just, the whole thing was really weird, but at the same time, it was kind of like, wow, I don't know any other way to describe it. And you know, when Shadow walked into the pool house and the first Jesus was sitting there on the water, you know, and he was sitting there drinking water, and then he sat his glass onto the pool, and of course the glass sank, but he's still sitting on it. He was just so disappointed.
It was just funny.
It was just that particular Jesus was hilarious, because during the midst of all of this, of course, there's like a confrontation with Mr. Wednesday and Easter or Ostara. I think that was her name, right? Ostara.
Yeah.
And he's basically telling her how, you know, this was her day. Easter was her day first. That was when people used to worship her. And then all of a sudden, here comes this quote unquote Jesus guy who steals her thunder. And now people pray to him. And now he's the, you know, the big man on campus. And, you know, how they pretty much knocked her out of her, you know, her important status. And that Jesus was like, oh, I feel so bad now. And it was just, it was just so funny. It was just something I wasn't expecting, but I kind of liked it. It's like it was, of course, we're dealing with a show talking about gods and religion and that sort of thing. So it was serious in a way. And he made some, you know, good points if you're looking at it from that aspect, but also the fact that they could bring, you know, that religious comedy, I guess, aspect and make it a little lighthearted.
Jesus was comic relief in this instance, and I think it was a very brilliant way to use such a powerful figure in our current culture.
Yes.
So, and I think it was very daring. Very daring.
Yes.
I haven't seen Jesus used as comic relief nicely done since Hamlet 2, when they had a song called Rock Me Sexy Jesus, and that was just funny. You ever heard, okay, have you seen Hamlet 2?
I have not.
It is, you have to see Hamlet 2, because it makes no sense.
Okay.
Because,
okay,
you know, Hamlet dies, blah, blah, blah. Anyway, but the film is funny. Anyway, in this this scene, and you know, I do want to kind of back up and go maybe a few episodes back to like how we got to Easter in the finale and where we kind of left. I'm not quite sure where we left off before, but I think
I believe the last episode that we talked about in episode 2, I think 227, I think we had gotten to the episode where
Made it snow, and then the next after that was Get Gone. So it was, or maybe we were talking about Get Gone, and it was about Laura, how she was depressed and blurdy blur. And
yes, okay, so we didn't get to the, so okay, so yes, there's a lot we need to cover because we find out a little bit more about Matt Sweeney's background. Not much, but a lot. There was another episode where it was mainly Laura as not Laura. She was actually playing another character from back in the, I believe it was the 1800s. And Matt Sweeney was the, you know, the leprechaun or the fairy that she used to pray to because Essie. That was, yes. Essie McGowan, I think that was her name.
So,
and
as far as the Essie McGowan episode, I think it was okay, but I think it lasted too long. I got what they were trying to do, but I think that it felt to me like somebody was so in love with this actress who plays Laura that they made her two different characters and they extended this episode to include her for reasons unknown, because why did we need to know about her? She's not a god. It was the leprechaun that was a god. And it was like, I liked that they flipped the, because you know how they have the cold open of each show with something about a god, right? And then they get into the actual episode. So this episode was kind of the reverse, right? It was all about, you know, mythology, and then it was the other way. Well, while it was a really, really good episode, it was too much of that actress. And it's not that I don't like her. It's just like, oh, is she a major part? I didn't think she was going to be this much in the episode. I thought when she died, we got rid of her.
That's not the case.
I appreciated the episode and it was well done. I wish it was any other actress but her, because I wanted to save her for the role that she already has. You know what I mean? I felt like she had too much exposure because in the finale, this is where, to me, she actually shined and became a character and became important. You know what I mean? It felt like before it was like, oh my God, why are they using her so much? And then I wish they would have just saved her face and saved her story.
I get what you're saying. I think for me, because, you know, I told you I started reading the book right after the show premiered. So that Essie McGowan chapter, I actually just read that. Like, I read it maybe the week before that episode actually aired. And it was actually a good chapter for me to read, you know, just finding out about this character. And just the kind of things that she went through. And it was just, to me, again, it was, I kind of took it as there's this, you know, there's this woman who is, you know, back in the olden times, and she started out as basically a servant, and how she kind of not necessarily rose up and, you know, conquered, but just basically how she had to fight her way through the world. You know, she, in the book, she fell in love with the son of the homeowner that she worked for. And, you know, their romance was a little, you know, was forbidden, but he promised to marry her. He gave her this piece of jewelry that was supposed to be like a promise to her. And then when it was discovered that she had it, she was accused of theft.
And then the whole story progresses. Well, that's a good story, but they fleshed it out in so much detail, Hanako. This would have been better to have this much care taken with Bilquist. I would have preferred a god get this much screen time than a human. This is my point.
I think the reason why maybe they did that is to kind of, you know, even though she's not playing the same character, she does maybe, I don't know if Essie is supposed to be like an ancestor of Laura, but we see that where Matt Sweeney has this connection with that character so many years before, and now maybe that's why he's, I guess, in some ways feeling guilty about what we find out has happened to Laura Moon in the present day. And maybe that's kind of why he's keen on helping her, maybe as some kind of penance. I don't know. Maybe, I don't know if those characters are connected, but maybe he just, maybe Laura reminds him of this character who's, you know, hundreds of years ago used to believe in him and worship him. And maybe that's why he, you know, trying to help her out, even though he really can't stand her. You know, that's just kind of how I looked at it. Again, I don't know if the characters are actually connected, you know, and that's the reason why they used Emily Browning in both roles. But that's just kind of the way that I took it, you know. Like maybe it's supposed to be a bridge, you know, some kind of bridge between the past and the present. So
I got it, but it wasn't. I wish he would have acknowledged that and we not have to try to guess at that, because if there was a connection and she was like maybe a descendant of this character, then to me it would be better. But because it wasn't expressly said, I'm not really sure what they were trying to do with keeping the characters the same. I understand if they kept him the same, but her, I'm not really sure of. And the reason why I say that is that I enjoyed, like before, it's like, is she going to die? Because, you know, she's practically a zombie, not really. When the coin, and they had the crash in the middle of the SC episode, and the coin came out of her, and she was dead again, that... Because we had already seen she was overexposed in the episode already, to me it was shocking and it caught my attention. Mm-hmm. But I just knew that he was, because of the tenderness that he had shown to this Essie character, that he was gonna show her that same tenderness, and then thusly it made it predictable. I get it. Yeah, you know, I mean, I don't know. I'm not sure. I just don't, because I feel like when my favorite part of the finale is when she goes through all of this crap to get to this man, and she's been following him and following him, and finally Easter just like did what she did. Everything happened, and we'll talk about that. I'm just going to breeze over for right now. And then she turns around, and she was just like, threw her hand up. I need to talk to my husband. And he turns around, and he smiles at her dead person who died with a dick in her mouth.
And who is just dead. Not going to let her live that
Like, well, how do you live that down? I mean, yeah, did you die it down?
That was one hell of a way to die.
So when he forgives her, I'll forgive her. So I think maybe whatever happens with them. But the way he smiled at her, I was just like, what is his deal? And I loved like how she looked in that red
the red jacket.
I was just like, she, right in that moment, I was like, oh my God, she's so cool. You know what I mean? So I don't know. Right. So it's like, there's not a hate on. It's like, I want them to save her to have more impact. And I feel like they're using her too much anyway.
Okay.
So with that, What else has happened? I'm kind of reading.
Let's talk about Bilquis.
Okay, let's do that.
Because we got a lot of her backstory in that season finale.
What did you get? Because I feel like it was, I did orgies in ancient Egypt. I danced the disco. I escaped the Iranian Revolution. I came to America, became a bum, and now I'm saved by technology.
Well, I love that we find out like where she started, and then I guess to kind of see her rise and to see her fall, because as you mentioned, you know, we see in the early days, she was this goddess. She was, you know, heavily worshipped, like kings tried to claim her, and she wasn't having any of that. You know, she was devouring kings. She was devouring her followers. And then she, you know, she kind of survived all the way up through the first flashback we see of her is in 1979. And, she, you know, like you said, this was at the Iranian Revolution. And she's in a nightclub with one, you know, with a lady who I guess, you know, you can say is one of her worshipers. And they're dancing and whatever. And then all of a sudden, these men with guns come into the club and they kind of break things up. And this is kind of the start of Bilquis's fall. And it's just like the narration that Mr. Nancy was given. He said, basically, you know, the kings in the past, they tried to take her down. You know, they tried to overpower her and they couldn't. So here it is now in this modern day. The kings sent people with guns and knives. And that was how they started to take her power. So after this club breaks up, this scene breaks up, the follower is on a plane coming to America and Bilquis is on the plane with her. And this is the first time that we actually really kind of see the gods as we see them on the show being brought over to America, hence the name American Gods. And, you know, flash forward a few years later, this same worshiper is in the hospital. She's dying from HIV. And at this point, this is where I think we start to see Bilquis fall. And I actually read a couple of interviews last week, earlier this week after the finale, just to kind of get some insight on what the episode was trying to tell us. And it basically, the actress who plays Bilquis, and I'm not going to try to attempt her name because I don't want to butcher it, but she, you know, very beautiful actress. She says that this was the start of Bilquis kind of losing her sense of self. You know, HIV is something that was new in the 80s. It was powerful. It was taking people, you know, and the stigma of HIV is it is a sexually transmitted disease. And Bilquis's power comes through sex, you know, sex and love and adoration and lust. So with this big disease coming in and pretty much wiping people out, this is where her power started to fail, to the point where she forgot who she was, you know. And then we see her in 2013, and like Kat said, she's a bum. She's living on the street, you know. I mean, the whole getup. She's in rags, and she's pushing around a shopping cart, and her face is full of sores, and her hair is not combed, and she approaches this restaurant that has like an image of her on their menu, and then she looks on the TV screen and she sees where ISIS rebels are tearing down her temples in her home country. And, you know, she really starts to kind of lose herself. And then, of course, here she is sleeping on the street. And who shows up? The technical boy. And basically, this is where we see how Bilquis is kind of flourishing in with her worship, you know, as we've seen in the few episodes that we've seen her. Whereas Mr. Wednesday and the other guys are not, because Technical Boy approached her with a smartphone and an app that was supposed to mimic, like, I guess, Tinder or whatever that dating app is. And basically, this is how she starts getting her power back, because she puts herself out there as somebody on a dating site. This is where she's starting to get all of these victims that we've seen in the earlier episodes where we've seen her. And so this is how, you know, I told you, I don't know if this is something intentional that the show is doing or not, but every time she has one of these encounters, she looks a little more refreshed physically. Hmm. But basically all it is, I think she described it in her interview as, for Bilquis, it's like, yes, she's making the conquest. She's had, you know, she's having sex with all these people. They're kind of sort of worshiping her. But at the same time, it's almost like, it's like being a person on a diet, consuming a whole bunch of water. It's nothing but empty calories. It's yeah. not filling her. It's not satisfying yeah. her. And we can kind of see that. And so now we see that Technical Boy is actually trying to use Bilquis as a weapon against the old gods. And because he brought her the means to, I guess, kind of resurrect herself, now she's in his debt. So he's sending her to this meeting with the old gods, and we don't know what she's supposed to do, but he just basically, you know, at one point in the episode, she tries to seduce him, and he was like, uh-uh, honey, I'm not for that, but you can point that gun somewhere else. And she looks at him, and she starts getting terrified because, again, he's about to use her as a weapon against these other gods, so I don't know how
hey, that's a good
out,
call out.
It yeah. was kind of interesting.
Yeah, that's so. A very good observation. About you can point that gun somewhere else because she's a weapon. That's good, Hanukkah.
I mean, but that's literally what he said to her. Yeah. He said, point that gun somewhere else. And I'm like, oh, he's about to use her. Because then at the end of the episode, she actually has the very last scene in the episode. And we see her on a charter bus, and the charter bus is pulling up to the House on the Rock, which is where in what Wisconsin, where all of these guys are supposed to have this meeting. So,
man, she's just terrible. Like, number one, why are you on a bus? Why do you have a chauffeur or some one of your victims drive you somewhere?
Well, you can't have somebody drive you somewhere if they're like, as Technical Boy said, if they're worshiping her from within the vagina nebula. You know, she rode
on a bus with like 500 people. Why couldn't she? Like, I don't understand. I wouldn't have been on no damn bus. Okay. You're a goddess, goddamn it. Don't be on a damn bus.
She does that for a reason, because throughout the episode, we see when she comes over to America, she's on a plane. And then, you know, she's actually, I think at one point she's on a train, or she's maybe on an airplane again. But we see that she's also picking up victims there. You know, she's going into the airplane bathroom and into the bus bathroom, and she's having these encounters, and these guys are disappearing. So maybe that's something for her. You know, if she's in a limousine by herself, she doesn't have anyone around her. So
She needs a to-go plane.
Basically. And I mean, what better buffet than on a bus? I mean, you've got, look, those charter buses hold, what, 60 people at a time?
I've never been on one, so.
You got your pick. If you want American food, you want Chinese, you want...
Oh, my God.
I mean, hey,
stop.
I'm just saying. She's got a practical buffet, so why would she be chauffeured around in a limousine?
So funny.
You can't eat if you're, you can't eat if you're sitting at the table.
I don't know. I'm worried about Bilquis. It is as if she's being used. I don't think, I wanted them to take as much care as they took with the Essie McGowan episode with Bilquis. I thought she deserved a little bit more
inside,
but I'm glad, I'm fine. I'm not going to go into the McGowan thing again. I'm sorry, Hannah.
No, I'm saying, I think she is supposed to have a very large part in season two, because from what I understand,
don't spoil,
she didn't, no, I'm saying in the books, I don't think she lasted this long.
That was a spoiler. I literally said, no spoiler. You did a book spoiler.
That is, I said, I think. I don't know because I haven't gotten to that part yet.
I read the book and I remember certain things. And
oh, okay. But I mean, you know, it's just like, I don't know if her, you know, I don't know what happens to her character. I don't know if her character is like, because I know in the books, like the Salim and the Jin scene, that was only supposed to be one scene. And, you know, we got a lot more of Salim in the season. Because he's actually on this search to go find the djinn. And from what I understand, that's not in the book. So I'm just saying.
Well, because maybe he was kind of in it, but not in it, because nothing really developed out of that. He was right. Just kind of along for the ride. So why not bring him back? I thought that was good. I liked that use of him. And I like we got to just hang out with him and see him. And he was kind of there for no reason at all.
Yeah, but I think he's coming back in season two too. So I don't know, but yeah, I from what I have seen so far, I think Bilquis is supposed to be she's supposed to play a major role next season. And of course, if Technical Boy is using her to kind of get at the other guys, I can imagine it's probably going to get intense. You know,
let's talk about,
no pun intended.
Yeah, right. Let's talk about Gillian Anderson. Scully.
Let me just say, I love her in this show.
That woman is my hero across time.
She's a damn chameleon in this show. Like she is everybody, and she's like playing these characters so flawlessly.
How is she even any what?
She is the
biggest, like, there's so much going on in this show. Each character is just a universe, and to themselves, you can talk an hour about each of these people. And media has been Lucy, she's been Marilyn Monroe, ridiculously, mm-hmm. which was hilarious. She's been David freaking Bowie. Did I?
And when I tell you, she put her foot in that one. I was just like, oh. I mean, I saw I saw a promo photo about a week before it aired. And when I looked, I had to do a double take and I was like, oh my God, this Gillian Anderson. Like, wow.
That woman.
Yeah, she's a chameleon. And I'm going to tell you this. With the performances that have been in this show, I know that sometimes some of our sci-fi shows or our fantasy shows don't necessarily get the quote-unquote media hype or the awards hype, but considering that she's a quote-unquote a guest star, this show, if she does not get some kind of Emmy nomination or Emmy for best guest appearance, blah, 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 whatever, whatever, I'm going to be so pissed because she earned it.
That woman,
she earned it.
That is my favorite woman on the planet right now. Because she has always been my hero. Like her, Samantha Carter, like those are my folks. And oh my God. Anyway, she has just such tiny parts and she's just very measured, very amazing. I can't say enough good things about that, what she's doing.
And then she was Judy Garland in this last episode.
That's what that was?
That's who she was. I had to go look it up because I was like, it was on the tip of my brain and I couldn't figure out who she was supposed to be. But the manner of speech was so familiar. I was like, who is she supposed to be? It was driving me nuts, so I went to go look it up, and I was like, oh, that's who she, yes, okay.
Kind of because you just blew my mind off. You just blew me away right now.
It was driving me nuts.
My head is literally blown off right now. it was like right there in the back, like something's happening, but you don't know what, maybe it's Easter, she's in an Easter dress, whatever. I had not realized that she was,
Yes.
That's like a dream role.
She just and she's killing it. She is killing it. She is doing so. But you know, like I said,
you know who should have been freaking Essie McGowan. In? You know who should have been Essie McGowan. You know what I'm going to say. It should have been Scully.
Yeah.
Oh, I love that woman. Anyway, I also enjoyed. So if we talk about the police scene where we have the police find Shadow after he sees Laura in the hotel, and they come in and bust him and Mr. Wednesday and take him off to the jail, right? So he's sitting in jail, and he got this smart mouth cop, and she's taking him down too, you know. She's getting him to talk. She got inside his head. She, you know, got him asking questions. All this was happening, and then lights flicker, screams. Things happen, and then media floats in as Marilyn Monroe floats, and then Shadow is like, how is Lucy here floating? And she's Marilyn Monroe. I don't understand. He still can't believe what's going on. Right. And so technical boy came in, apologized for lynching the black man, said it was important.
No, actually, he came in after Mr. World did. Mr. World came in first, walking in like Billie Jean, like Michael Jackson on the Billie Jean video.
Oh my God, that was beautiful, beautiful, beautiful. You're right.
And then Technical Boy came in because Mr. World was like, is he still pouting or something? Or is he still moping or something? Because he was making him apologize to Mr. Wednesday and to Shadow. Yes. But, okay, so Crispin Glover. So let's talk about him. Because
treat.
You know
what
he brings this brilliant weirdness to most of his roles. So when he walked in, the way that he did and the way that he introduced himself and just I don't even know how to describe it.
It was almost as amazing as Scully. And I didn't know who was going to be under that hat, but when it was him, it was perfection. It was perfect.
But it's also like, you look and you're like, oh, who else is going to play that role? Because my daughter and I were watching it together. And as soon as he took that hat off, she was like, oh shit, it's about to go down. And she was trying to remember. She was like, I don't even remember. She said he was in another role where he was so weird, but he was so good. And I said, Charlie's Angels. I said, he was the one snatching their hair and sniffing. And she was like, yes, that was him.
Seriously,
that was
that's where you're like, going with that? You're not going back to the future with that?
No, well, you got to think, my daughter's 19.
Oh, okay.
So Charlie's Angels is more in her... You know, more in her headspace than Back to the Future is. So, okay. You know, but you know what? I completely forgot. I was looking at something the other day, and I looked at the picture, and I was like, "How? It's like one of those things where you know it, but you've known it for so long that you forget it."
Yeah.
Because I looked and I was like, "Oh, duh, that was him." Yeah. Okay, I remember. So yeah, but he just like I said this before, and I don't know if we discussed this on the episode we did a couple of weeks ago. Whoever was in charge of casting this show
a master.
Did an amazing, amazing master. Job.
This was not leftover Canadian actors.
I don't know.
That's so offensive.
Yes.
Oh, that's me and Carl's thing where we go in and we just rag on Canada because we love fiction from Canada.
We're not gonna
we rag on them because they're our brothers. They're our North American brothers, and only we can make fun of them. Blah blah blah. But these and a lot of the actors are Canadian, so whatever. But like you said, Hanako, this thing was casted to death.
They did a great job.
Mess around. They did not pull any bull crap. They knew who they wanted, and they went in, they got it, and they got the performance that they deserved. And they're giving us something really wonderful that I mean, TV. So there's so much competition out there right now. You know what I mean?
There is. So let me tell you something else that kind of that kind of brought out the 80s kid in me as well. The episode, I believe it was episode six or seven, the Vulcan episode.
Yeah.
When we got into this Vulcan episode and we actually met Vulcan, I kept looking at him like,
I know who this face is.
Corbin Burnson. When I tell you, as a kid, my mom used to watch LA Law all the time. So this is where I remember him from, like my earliest memories of him.
LA Law.
Like,
Really? That's where you're going with that?
Because that's the earliest role I can remember him in. And you know, that show went on for a long time. But when I say my mom was an avid watcher, so every week that's what I saw. So, and you know, he's done other roles since then, but that was the first thing that I remember. And I was like, oh my God, he's in the show. I just kind of like it when people that I've known from my childhood, they reappear in something very prominent in my adulthood. For me, that's just kind of like, it's like, I don't know, kid in a candy store type thing.
Mm. I guess I'm used to seeing him on Psych because I watch Psych.
Yes, and see, I didn't watch Psych that as much. You know, I only watched like a few episodes of that, but he was, what's his name's dad, right?
Yeah, so...
So, yeah, but, you know, again, still, one episode.
That was really good. That was really very.
It was a great episode.
That was a great episode. It was very modern. It was very tuned into now. It hit a lot of nerve, a lot of points of how
the things are aspect.
Yeah, it's mm-hmm. how things mm-hmm. are in America, and how, you know, even some people can perceive gun people because to me that's this how that whole little town he had built up, to me that's how a lot of those people seem to me. So the perspective that he put on those people was very cool. I don't think that those people see themselves like that, you know what
right.
I mean,
right?
But that I think whoever knows their audience knows that their audience might perceive those type of people that way. And so right. it was very clever and very aware.
And they've done that with quite a few of the episodes. It's like the underlying social message.
Yeah.
Of the episodes, as far as, you know, again, the treatment of Black people in America, the treatment of women, like you said, the Second Amendment argument, you know, just different little things that we've seen throughout the season. It's like it's not overly political, but the show does, you know, bring those instances up in a way to really make you think and kind of take a look at what's going on.
Yeah.
So, but they do it in a very clever way.
It was amazing. I loved the sacrifice story and how, like, he gets his, you know, sacrifice to the god through factory accidents, you know, and it's just like,
yes.
Oh my God, is every time somebody die in a factory a sacrifice to a god? What does that mean on a larger scale of how America's built and blah, blah, blah? You know what I mean? It just kind of blows your mind right. for a second if you let it, you know, your imagination kind of go with it. And it was a really powerful episode. I was sad to see him go.
Yeah, I know. And what a way he went.
Oh my God. And then I liked how Mr. Wednesday was like, well, you did all of this. You almost joined the great team, but they killed you. And I was just like, what you talking about? He was like, what you talking about?
And then he turned around and carried that to his meeting with Astara.
After he had chopped his head and then told her that they killed him. But from his perspective,
they did.
Right. But, and it's clever because it's like, if you're insane and you want to define it that way, well, then in a roundabout way, yes, they killed him because they predicted your movements and behavior and how you would go down if he betrayed you. So in essence, yes, they did kill him. But dude, you sliced his head off.
Right. Right. And then Shadow is looking at him like, hold up, did he just like... Because Shadow was pissed. The beginning of the episode, Shadow was pissed. Shadow was like, you just cut your friend's head off. He was like, yeah, I'm done. Because, you know, at the beginning, Shadow said, I'm your man. I will work for you until the point that you piss me off, and then we're done. So at this point, at the beginning of the season finale, Shadow is done with Mr. Wednesday.
Uh-uh,
he's like, confused. I don't care. And no, at first, he said he was done. Then he said, then once Mr. Wednesday, again, master manipulator, has a way with words, but he made sense. Yes, I think Shadow was angry, but by the time Mr. Wednesday got finished talking, he was like, okay, yeah, you're right. No, I'm not angry. I'm confused. I'm very confused. I don't know what's going on. And it's just kind of like all through the season, we've seen where Shadow has basically tried to stand firm, I guess, with what he believes. But again, because of the fact that he really doesn't believe anything, I think that's one of the reasons why he's been able to be swayed, this, that, and the other. Because here it is, 7 episodes. We don't know how long, you know, what kind of time span this is taking place over. But you've seen all of these fantastical things. You know, you've seen faceless men abduct you into a limousine with a guy smoking a toad in a vape. And then, and then you get, you know, you literally get attacked by all these faceless guys. You get
who somehow knows knows dance routines, threatening dance routines.
You know, and then you see some kind of image killing all of these things that just hung you, which we found out later, of course, was Laura. But you've seen this. Your wife has come back from the dead. Not just, oh, I'm seeing a vision. No, you've touched her. You've kissed her. You've seen her taking a bath with her stitches from her autopsy. And all you know, you see this. And then in the police station, you get attacked by a tree that's growing out of a chair and literally digs into your side. In the same police station, you have Lucy turned Marilyn Monroe float into the room. You have Mr. World come in and basically turn the walls into a weird unicorn fetish cartoon type thing. And through all of this, he still says, I don't believe it. I don't believe it. It's in my head. I don't know what the deal is with Shadow.
Shadow's just a weird bird. He's just weird.
And apparently there has to be something to him, because we find out in the season finale that Mr. Wednesday is the one who orchestrated everything in Shadow's life from the time he met Laura.
This is the vindication I wanted to get with Laura too. Reason why I loved her at the end, because you know how I was suspicious of her, and I was just like, I think she wanted to get rid of him, and she sabotaged the whole thing just to get him out of the house.
Yes, you did say that.
And I was just like, this, because I didn't trust her. You, like, when somebody does something really, when they betray you, you can imagine them doing anything. Like, you can't trust them anymore. You know what I mean? And you can imagine them to doing, like, any crazy thing. So I didn't put it past her to have done something like that, because if you can break somebody's heart that cruelly, then what else can you do that's cruel? You know, what are your limits? So,
I didn't think that it was intentional.
You did, and I'm glad I was wrong about that, because now it softened me to her. You know what I mean? I was just like, okay, so I can allow for a mistake, and I think after her afterlife, so far she's been trying. You know what I mean? And and how long was he in jail for? 4 years?
He was in jail for almost three.
Almost three.
Almost three. He was supposed to get out at 3 years, and they let him out a few days early because of Laura's dying.
So, you know what? Let's give her a break. You know what I mean? That's not easy to be in the prime of your life and lose your guy and have to be a nun.
Through some weird circumstances, because as she said, that, you know, she said the plan was perfect. And even Mad Sweeney said it wasn't perfect because you weren't counting on a god.
Yeah.
You know, basically, you weren't counting on this higher being interfering with your plans. If the gods did not have Shadow in their sights, that plan probably would have gone perfectly. They'd probably be sitting back on some island rich to death right now, and none of this would even be taking place. But we see that those events were manipulated. I'm even wondering if it was to the point where their meeting at all was manipulated as well. Like, was she a tool that was being used to bring Shadow into this particular world? And if so, why? I mean, we know Shadow has, there's something important about him. Even Mad Sweeney says he's not important, but he's the guy. So it's like, what does that mean? He's not important, but he's the guy. You know, I mean, even Easter said, oh, is this the man that has everybody worried? And Shadow's looking, he's giving her a confused look, like, why are they worried about me? And then I think that's the question everybody's asking, like, what the hell is it about Shadow Moon?
And then they made another point that stuck out to me, which was, he wasn't born this way. It kind of just happened somewhere along the way. So he wasn't like, you know, like Harry Potter with a destiny. He was kind of, it just kind of happened. It was random. And that's fascinating to me, because that just doesn't, like, why, how? Like, what? Why?
Right.
Why him? And then could it have been anyone? Is it, I mean, and then it makes you think, well, then is it Laura? Oh, is she the one?
Wait. No, I don't, that's probably wrong. But I just thought about something that was said to him a little while back, but that probably.
Tell me.
I was just thinking, so Shadow was born of a prostitute.
Oh, I forgot that.
He was born of a prostitute. Yeah, so you see where I was going with that.
Are you cute?
I don't know. Maybe I'm way off, but that just popped into my head, and I was just like, oh, wait.
That's nice. Let's tell it to the class.
So, I'm just kind of wondering if Shadow is, like, somehow related to Bilquis. Like, is that her? I don't know. And it may be something that's just so far left. But if you think about it, Shadow was, you know, he was born to, you know, his mother died young, which, of course, you know, or maybe, I don't know. It's just kind of weird. Shadow was born to a prostitute, and like Mr. World knew, you know, how many partners she had, which we, of course, we know Bilquis had way more than 86 partners. But still.
No, I think he said that he had 86 partners or something.
He said Shadow's mother had 86 partners in her lifetime. So we know Bilquis had way more
than
that.
So it must not have been her. Or maybe
but
it was
I'm
one.
I'm wondering if there's some kind of connection there.
Yeah.
I don't know. That I'm just throwing things out.
That's good.
That just kind of popped into my head, and I was like, oh wait, because we don't really know much about Shadow's mother, except for the fact that she died when he was young, and she died of cancer, and then of course that she pretty much got around. You know, that she was a whore. And that we have absolutely no idea. Like, Shadow's father has never been mentioned in this show, not once. They've mentioned his mother, never mentioned his father.
Then it could be some Zeus shit. You know what I mean?
I mean,
he could be like a demigod.
You never know. Maybe Bilquis got pregnant and she took her pregnancy and put it in someone else to kind of hide him. Maybe.
So, you know, I don't remember that being in the book, but if they made something new for the show like that, I would not mind. I could tell you a couple of people offhand that would be irritated, but I, Katrina, would enjoy that.
Oh, she used her full name with y'all, so... We know.
So what else?
Yeah, that would be an interesting
theory. That was good, though. Hanako. That was exciting.
That would be an interesting theory.
Yeah.
I don't know if that's true, but you know, it would be interesting because again, I just want to know what is it about Shadow? Like he glows to Laura like the Jesus plurals were glowing to him when he showed up at Easter's house. You know, they all had this little glow. Even the Virgin Mary, when she was sitting there nursing baby Jesus, she had a little bit of that glow. And it's like with each deity, they all had this little glow, but some of them were larger than others.
You know,
so
too,
I don't know if maybe that was something significant.
When he first
him.
Walked in, though, Hanako, I thought it was just an Easter themed costume party, honestly. I was just like, what? Why do we have, this is a nice costume party. So it wasn't until like halfway through it that I realized that, these are actually Jizai. So I'm going to have to watch it again to see like all of that, because I just thought it was a weird costume party.
I think that's the way it was supposed to look at the beginning. But I think once, you know, when Wednesday and Shadow had that talk and Shadow said something about gods, these are all gods. And I think once that idea was planted in his head, when he started looking around at everybody, that's when he could kind of start seeing the globes. So I think maybe at that point, that was when Shadow started to believe. That's the way I looked at it. Because when they first walked in, of course, like you said, I thought it was just, I was like, okay, so people are dressing up for Easter. That's kind of weird. You
That's
going to
be the next thing, though, dude. We're going to have Easter cosplay.
You know what? Let me tell you, with this show, I'm so ready for Dragon Con. I just want to see the costumes. I'm so ready for Dragon Con to get here because I know there's probably going to be like 50 million Laura Moons. And let me tell you, the people who come to Dragon Con, their attention to detail on their costumes is so amazing. So I'm waiting for someone to walk around as dead Laura. I'm just waiting for it. You know, I want to see who's going to do Mr. Nancy and do it right. I want to see who's going to be Shadow Moon. I want to see Mad Sweeney. I really want to see
Mr.
Mad Sweeney.
Nancy.
But you know.
Oh, Mad Sweeney. But Mr. Nancy and him sewing and in that ornate jacket and that antique sewing machine. I was just like, it was just an amazing visual.
With his shoes,
and I was like, okay, so are they making him a literal Mr. Nancy, like a British Nancy? Does that mean he's gay or he is dandy? Like, what are they doing with him? And you know what? Does it matter? It doesn't, because he's amazing. So that's why, like, it's just like he's just Mr. Nancy. Don't overthink it, and I like.
Oh, and then here's the other thing on the real world side of that. Do you pay attention? Do you follow him on social media at all?
Girl, every podcast we talk about this man, you say the same thing about his social media.
Let me tell you,
I'll see him every once in a while.
You have to go look at his Instagram, because every week after the show, he puts up his own memes, and he takes clips from the show, and he does like stupid little things from, like, he has this persona. I don't know if you saw the commentary. He did a Facebook Live video a couple of weeks ago when all the stuff came out about Bill Maher saying the N-word on his show and how people were outraged about it. So he gave his own little, you know, opinion in a Facebook Live post, and he went slap off, which he normally does. But one of the things he said, and he was like, and for those of you who want to troll my page, bring it, because I'm the biggest troll you'll ever see. I troll myself, and he actually does. He has his troll name, like his internet name, is hashtag Trollando. And so he puts this at the end of all his little American Gods memes, and he does some of the funniest memes, and then at the end, it's him in that first episode as Mr. Nancy when he starts laughing. And it's just, his videos are gold. Like, you have to go watch. You have to go watch them, because if you're thinking about his character and then you see the memes that he is posting, it's the funniest thing. The absolute funniest. I'll
see him every once in a while, but I follow so many people on
social media. Yeah. No, I will do a search.
I'm following him right now. Fine, I've done it. Jeez. Ooh, I'm following Jillian Anderson and Neil Gaiman and Chadwick Boseman and Nicole Beharie is on. Nathan Fillion. How am I not following him already? Okay, stop it.
Hey, focus.
Okay. Sorry. Okay. Yeah, Where are we? Okay.
Yeah, going back to Shadow.
So the tree thing, and then the tree thing getting embedded in Shadow's stomach. Yet another excuse for him to take off his shirt, which I didn't care. I like how he distracted him to get it taken out of him because it was making him ill. What was it trying to grow in him or something? That was weird.
I have no idea what it was doing. I think maybe it was trying to trying to keep him from going to this meeting, whatever it is, and for whatever reason. But it's, I don't know. I need to know the purpose of this meeting. And again, I need to know what Shadow is or who he is. And I'm so glad I'm actually taking the book with me on my trip so that I can read it on the plane in the morning.
You know what he is, Shadow? He's a Sookie Stackhouse. He's a damn fairy, I bet.
You know what? No, we will not go there.
He's a damn fairy.
We will not.
He glows like a damn fairy. He make it snow like a fairy. A winter fairy. You thinking about it, aren't you?
I'm sitting here thinking about it because the funny thing is you keep bringing up the True Blood references, and I'm actually sitting here.
Oh, you were right. That actress was not on True Blood. She was on Glee. She wasn't on Glee. I don't know why I got those confused, but whatever.
But yeah, so I'm sitting here thinking about Sookie when we found out that she was Faye. And yeah, some of those same things were kind of happening to her. So I don't know, maybe Shadow's maybe he's a fairy. Maybe he's, you know, kind of like a counterpart to who Matt Sweeney is supposed to be. Because Matt Sweeney is technically a fairy, I think, and not a leprechaun. But
the wee Faye. So Matt Sweeney.
Man. Let me tell you. And here's the funny thing.
When we didn't even finish it. You just let me tell you.
We were watching it. Okay, so my daughter watches Orange is the New Black. Mm. I really don't. I've seen an episode here or there, but it's not really in my wheelhouse. There's no fantasy. There's no supernatural. So I don't.
Yeah, it's
really
about jail. Not fun at all. Yeah.
So, but basically, I don't really watch a whole lot of shows that don't have those aspects in it. So, but I was watching it with her, and she said something about Matt Sweeney. She was like, "Oh my God, I know who he is." And I was like, "Who?" She said, "He's Pornstash." I said, "Who is Pornstash?" She said, "From Orange is the New Black." And I was like, "Oh, the guard." And then it was the episode. It was an episode in Orange is the New Black where his character is in his mother's kitchen. I think basically what happened was he knocked up one of the prisoners and she had a baby that's in foster care. So that was the whole background. So I'm looking at him on the screen, and of course his hair is not naturally. He's not naturally a ginger. I don't think his hair.
He's so convincing though.
Oh, yes, he is. But anyway, okay. So I'm watching him on the screen, and his hair is dark. And of course, he's not speaking with the Irish accent or this, you know. So I'm just looking at him, and I'm like, "Oh my God, that really is him!"
Guess what, Hanukkah? He's Canadian.
Are you? Okay.
I told you they put some good Canadians in here, but that's just really funny. He's my favorite. I say that about every actor here. He's my favorite. But
I told you, they did not go wrong in this casting department. They whoever the casting person needs to get some kind of award. Like she needs a big statue sitting out. He or she needs a big statue sitting outside their door with best casting director ever. Mm-hmm. Because there have been characters that I have not liked or have not, you know, like gelled with, but it had nothing to do with the actress playing. Like the way that the actress portrayed them, like even with Emily Browning as Laura Moon, it's like, I love her as an actress. Didn't really care for Laura Moon in the beginning because of, again, the way that
she died with a dick in her mouth.
Yes.
Oh, okay. I was just making sure you.
Yes. You know, okay. She cheated on the man's shadow. So I had a little problem with her because how do you cheat on Shadow Moon? But, you know, so.
Oh, my God. His brother was Sabretooth and freaking is Leave. His brother's Leave. Yes. Oh, my God.
I found that out a few days ago, too. And I was like, wait,
this is
what?
This is like the Hemsworths. The sexiness runs in the family. Oh, my God.
And let me tell you how I found that out. So, apparently, there is an interview that he did where he was talking about how he wanted to play Wolverine if they did a reboot.
Who?
Pablo Schreiber. Matt Sweeney.
Yeah.
So apparently he says this, and then, so I'm reading the comments, and one of the comments, they say, nah, you know, I don't, you know, let's leave Wolverine alone. You know, we just put Wolverine to bed. You know, that's Hugh Jackman's role, but I could see him being Sabretooth. And then someone commented under that, Liv Schreiber is his half brother. And I was like, wait, what?
Oh, it's a half brother. Because I was like, Liv was born in California, so how is that?
I don't care. Brothers. Mm. Fine brothers at that. But anyway.
They rivaling the Hemsworths.
So
okay, I'm gonna stop. And why are they always playing Irish?
I don't know, but he does a good job of it, because I tell you, him and Emily Browning, both of their accents in those episodes, well, you know, him throughout the series, but Emily Browning as
she's from
Essie,
she's Australian.
Yes.
That's really good. I could not tell she was like from Australia either. Her American accent is amazing.
Yeah.
Like her American accent rivals Brother Stackhouse. His Southern accent, it was so good.
Yes,
Jason Stackhouse.
Yes. Yeah, but I mean. I liked her as Essie because of that fact. Like, I was like, oh, she sounds really authentic. And then apparently she has a gift for accents. That's
she
like
does.
One of her talents. So
I
yeah,
was but, thinking like the other day, I wish I had a gift for accents because it's so cool.
I know.
Yeah.
I know. But yeah, going back to what we were saying, you know, I just, even with her character, I didn't like the character, but the character is like, I've not met a character yet on the show that I didn't like, that I was like, okay, why are we even seeing them? Who cares about this character? Because even when they have very small roles, it seems like those small roles will play a significant part in the story overall. Mm-hmm. Like, you know, even down to the cop that arrested Shadow and Mr. Wednesday, you know, she died with all the other police, but she was the one that the little tree thing was, and I still don't know what that tree thing was. We need to look that up and figure out what that was. But, you know, even it coming through her to attack him was, I don't know, I felt like there's something significant about that. It might be nothing, but, you know, again, this is like one of those TV shows where there are no small parts, there are no bad parts. Like, everybody in the show has been amazing. You know? I don't know. I was not expecting to love the show as much as I do.
I wasn't expecting it. I mean, I knew it was going to be good, but I didn't expect this. I didn't expect this. I didn't know what to expect, to be honest. I don't know what I expected. No, I just didn't know what to expect, and I didn't expect this, and I'm glad. I was surprised. So, okay. So we talked about everything except for the big, big reveal.
Hanukkah. Which, okay, I'm trying, which big reveal?
Ian McShane is Odin.
Oh, yeah.
You're like, what?
No, because I already knew who he was.
I didn't, because he was just like, he used his other name, and then once he started going into like, I am the turner, ha ha, and then I do the ha with the winds, and ha ha, and I was just like, okay, yeah, who is this now? And I'm like, yeah, what now? Yeah, not who, what now? Yeah, bring it, come further, what now? And then he's a dar Odin. I was like, oh, okay. And then my second thought was, I kind of like Thor better, you know. And then I was just like, okay, whatever.
Yeah, but see, I kind of figured it when in the earlier episodes when they went to go visit Chernobog and he said he had to go get his hammer. Mm. I was like, okay, he's either, you know, at first I thought Thor, but I was like, no, Thor wouldn't be that old. And then, of course, like I said, because I was unfamiliar with some of the characters, I really just kind of wanted to get an idea of who was in the show. So when I went to go look it up, that's when I found out who he was supposed to be. And I was like, oh, that's kind of interesting. But it started kind of making sense to me because he was the god that the first episode where we got the background of the gods with the Vikings coming over and they were worshiping, that's who they were worshiping to. And they've kind of reflected that in a couple of the episodes. So I was like, okay, so he's supposed to be Odin. So he's supposed to be like the biggest and baddest of them all. But they're still talking about, and I'm wondering, is he supposed to be what the buffalo with the flaming eyes represents?
Because when
he was talking to the Midnight Star sister on the rooftop, and she was talking about how the buffalo has to be kept in his cage because if he gets out, he'll destroy the whole world. So I'm like, oh, is she talking about Odin, or is there something bigger and badder than him? But I think she may have been talking about him. So I don't know. Like I said, I have the book and I'm taking it with me tomorrow because I have to spend some time in the airport.
You know, I think I don't want you to read it because I don't want you to be disappointed. I don't want you to visualize something and then you're like, it was better in the book. Because if you say that, Hanukkah, I'm hanging up the podcast.
No, because you know what? Because I already know, just even from the little bit that I've read so far in the book, I see where it's different in the show. But again, like we discussed in the last episode, because I started watching the show first and then started reading the book, it's easier for me to separate the two mediums. Like I can look at it as, oh, this is what happens in the show and it's different. And this is what happens in the book and it's different. It would be different if I read the book, the source material first and then watched it. Mm-hmm. Then I would be more critical. But when I watch something first and then read it, the reading part actually kind of fills in blanks for me. And then, you know, like I said, there are some instances where I've read stuff in the book. And even though it's great the way that it reads, I think if they would have presented it on screen in that same way, it probably would have taken away from what we see visually. Mm-hmm. So I just want to read the book just because I want to have the information. And also because we probably won't see season two until sometime next spring.
Oh, child, don't tell me. What was that, eight episodes?
So I want to read that. Right. Why do they tease us? It's like
giving these old crazy British seasons. What is that crap about?
It's like giving us foreplay and then just saying, oh, yeah, psych.
The reveal is, I think the finale was pretty orgasmic.
It was good.
You know what I'm saying? It's the boyfriend that took you out. Y'all been going out for a while. And you know what I'm saying? He can have his little problems, but he pulled it out in it. Well, not pulled. Well, I'm just going to stop talking. I'm going to stop talking right now.
But anyway, also
yeah, because that went places I didn't think it was gonna go.
Once I read American Gods, I do want to go ahead and follow up with the Anansi boys, because I believe they may be, I believe there are talks going on to also do that as a show. So I want to just kind of read it and kind of get that out my system, because again, next spring.
Well, I gotta go. What? I got so much to do.
I love these shows, but I'm starting to really, really hate these hiatuses.
Hiatus
plural. I'm starting to hate them. They're so long, but that's okay, because I like the way that these shows are lining up, because as soon as one show ends, a couple of weeks later, we get a new, we get another show that's returning, and then once that show is done, so I like the way there used to be, like, years and years ago, I could go a whole season without watching anything because I wasn't really interested in whatever was playing, like, in the fall or in the spring or whatever. But it's like now I literally have shows that are must-see TV for me year-round, and I love it. So, Game of Thrones is coming back. And so, so I'll get my fix. But yeah, I do want to read. I think once I read the book, I'll probably go back and rewatch all of the, the whole season. Because once I get a little bit more background on the characters, there might be things that I didn't pick up on in the show that I may pick up on once I know a little bit more about the characters. So,
right.
Yeah. So I'm just going to kind of immerse myself. Yes.
Any final thoughts? Or I think those were final thoughts. How are we going to proceed? I think personally, it exceeded my expectations.
Yes, I would definitely agree with that.
All of the critiques that I've had are just things that you notice, things that I've noticed and things that I'm like, well, that could be different. And they don't really mean that much, because aside from little nitpicks, I think it's a perfect show.
It's kind of like they're cosmetic.
Right. So I think they did a really good job. And I think that any critiques or bad reviews or anything like that, they could just like say, hey, I like your feedback, but bite me. This was a great season. Everybody did an amazing job. They worked really
amazing.
Hard. And they made us feel things. Like Lara, I'm really impressed with her character. Sometimes I'm like, I don't like her. I hate her, blah, 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 blah. But she was enjoyable because she was,
The second half of the season, I will say, I think she grew on us more because we come to learn that she wasn't just this this boring, depressed character with no, just kind of existing. It's like she really feels like she has a purpose now. And again, I don't know if her being brought into the story, into Shadow's life, was part of the overall plan. But it's like I kind of feel like the way that she is with him now, she said it a couple of times. She said, when she was asked by the funeral director, was it love? And she was like, well, it wasn't, but it is, but I guess it is now. Or when she told Audrey, her best friend, I do love him. I just, I didn't know how much. And she even told Shadow, she said, I love you. I had to die in order to know how much. It's almost like, I feel like, when she died, whatever hold Wednesday or whoever had on her kind of was relaxed. And so now she could be her.
That's good.
And this is who she is.
That's good.
So, because if you see it, like, she has literally had a one-track mind. All she wants to do is get to her husband. And she knows that something weird is going on. She knows that he's mixed up in something crazy. And her instinct is to get to him and to try to protect him. And I feel like maybe that's who she has been all along, but we just couldn't see it because, again, there were already forces interfering in her life. Like
a dick in her mouth?
But, I mean, even that, I mean, again, that could be something else that Wednesday kind of orchestrated to put her in it, because we find out in the finale, He was the one that screwed it up so that Shadow had to go to jail. You know, he was the, you know, that's everything bad. You know, he basically had, and I don't know what his hold is over Matt Sweeney, but Matt Sweeney was the driver of the truck that ran them off the road.
Yep.
You know, and we saw this maybe two episodes ago where she was on the side of the road dying, and Matt Sweeney comes up and kind of looks her in the face. So that's when I was like, oh, wait a minute. Why is he there? You know, why is he there at the moment of her death? That was kind of weird to me. So now to know that he was actually the one who basically killed her on the orders of Mr. Wednesday, to me, that kind of puts her character into a whole different light for me. Because again, was her actions being manipulated throughout the whole relationship? Like, was she supposed to make Shadow fall so much in love with her and then to disappoint him? Because again, what they had to do for Shadow in order to for him to go with Mr. Wednesday, they had to make it so that he had nothing left. He didn't have family. Laura was his only family, and then she abandoned him, and not just abandoned him, but in the worst and most humiliating way.
Betrayal.
You know?
Right.
So it's like at that point, like you say, some people can deal with cheating or infidelity or, you know, jail time or whatever, but for her to have died in that kind of situation, not just cheating on him, but cheating on him with his best friend, and that was what they were doing when they died. You know, I just feel like something about that just, again, did not sit right with me.
That doesn't sit right. Okay. So you know what was always, you know what was also funny is that she was among a whole bunch of other Jesuses who came back from the dead.
Yeah. And then she
just popped in my head, and I'm like, what does that mean? What does it mean?
And she's so funny because she was like, are these all Jesus? Because at first she said, she kind of used his name, and then she's like, Jesus Christ. And then, of course, here's this line of Jesus Christ walking past her. And she was like, are they all Jesus Christ? And Matt Sweeney shorts, and she was like, yeah, because he's real. And it's like, also, you know, we see that now, of course, before when we got the flashback in her story, she told Shadow that she didn't believe in anything.
Yep.
She didn't believe in life after death. She didn't believe in heaven or hell. She didn't believe in anything. And so now, literally from the time of her death, she's been shown that she's wrong. Like, there is a judgment day, you know, when you die, or there is a place for you to go, whether it's heaven
but
or
only
hell
for
or your
her.
Own purgatory.
Only for her. Everybody else gets, well, no, not only for her, because the old lady who studied Egypt and stuff like that got her afterlife too. So, okay, never mind.
Yeah, but see, Laura wasn't going to have an afterlife because that she didn't believe in one. So he was basically going to put her in a box to just be in darkness for all eternity. But, you know, even with all of that, her being snatched back to life because of a magical coin, you know, her digging herself out of her grave, and she sees that she's, you know, she's literally pulled back her skin. She's had to sew back her own arm, just all these different things. Now she is put into a position where she is believing stuff that she didn't believe before either.
No.
And I think I don't know, maybe now that both she and Shadow are in that space where they are believing things that they previously thought impossible, maybe that's going to make them stronger. Maybe that's going to make them a team to kind of, I don't know, again, because I don't know what Shadow's purpose is in this whole thing. We don't know what's going to happen. Maybe Laura is the thing that he's going to need to get himself out of this situation, or maybe, you know, maybe she helps him. Maybe him, you know, Matt Sweeney out of some weird, you know, feeling of debt or guilt or whatever the case is, will help them and all that. I don't know. I'm just, like I said, I'm going to read the book because I can't wait till next spring to find out what happens. I want to know now.
Well, we will be fine. We'll find out. I think it's a good sign that we've done two podcasts on this.
in a few weeks, like, we were basically like, okay, we have to talk about this because we've been so busy and everything and working and this, that, and the other. And we've basically, like said, we have to do this.
Even it's Hanako. It's just Hanako has been on me. She has been on me. Hanako is keeping Sci-Fi Party Line alive, y'all. So I'm y'all trying. Thank her because she is the glue that's holding it together.
Oh, I have to have my outlet because I can talk to friends about this, but just the fact you and I have been podcasting together now for 7 years. Can you believe it?
Oh my God.
And no, excuse me. No, we've been podcasting together for about 10 years now, I think.
Girl, and this podcast ain't 10 years old.
It's okay. Well, it's been what?
It's about 2009.
I'm thinking about seven, so that's what I'm thinking. But yeah, and I like your math. This is my outlet. This is my outlet. One of the reasons why I get so long winded because I actually get to talk to people who will understand exactly what I'm trying to say about the shows and not look at me like, oh, she's crazy. Oh, she's
no. We still think you're crazy, but blah, blah, blah. You know it's well, okay. Yeah, but you're crazy
think,
too.
You guys think I'm crazy in a good way.
Yeah,
so,
that's
you know.
True. All right, guys. Well, that is our show. We love your feedback. Give us a call, 773-336-2686. Go to our website, like Alex, and leave us a message. Thank you, Alex. And let's see. Like our Facebook page. Go to our Facebook discussion. Hit us on Twitter, like Hal and all a bunch of other people. And I don't have the list in front of me right now. Sorry. thanks for listening. We hope you enjoyed the show, and we will see you at the party next time. Bye.
Bye.
End of line.